And we are live. Welcome to Take Note Podcast. I'm your host, Ananda, along with my co-host, Kaylee Kanana. And we are with our special guest today, Joris. Joris, how do you pronounce your last name? Colomb?
Colomb, yeah.
Colomb. French, okay. Colomb. Well, Colomb. It's very nice. We were just speaking before. I've crossed paths with Joris in Mayapur. You had brought in your bike one time to Mayapur. And I think maybe we had pizza also, or like we're in the same restaurant.
Yeah. I remember
something.
Yeah.
So we've crossed paths. So it's very nice to reconnect and actually have a nice conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us today, Prabhu.
Thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure, really. Also meet Kelly. You guys, I've been following you guys for a while, so it's been nice to finally sit down, or I'm standing, but exchanging.
Yeah. And Take Note, it's really our vision here with the Bodhika platform. Take Note, our vision really is to connect to that aesthetic experience of creativity in devotional service. How through the process of bhakti, this element of our creativity can be channeled in order to augment our experience of the spiritual reality that surrounds all of us. And so we're diving into that today. Our Namraz is here, Maharani's here. If you're listening and watching online, please write in. Let us know where you're coming from, where you're listening from, and give a shout out. Go ahead and share this podcast. Let it spread far and wide. Kelly, do you have anything you want to pipe in?
No, I'm super excited. Like, I've been following Joris a little bit over the last few weeks. Selfie time.
So I'm live, guys. On.
And I'm excited to actually connect. There's this really strange thing that can happen these days, where you can speak to someone for, like, there's people in my life I've spoken to for months and months, and I've never actually spoken to them. I've sent them a voice note or a message on WhatsApp or whatever it is, but I've never actually connected with them. If this is real, you know, I don't know, this is probably the best you can do on the internet. But yeah. It's nice to have a conversation in increments. So hopefully I can say a little bit and then you can say a little bit, instead of messaging you and you know, waiting a while and then you messaging me back and then you waiting a while.
Yeah.
So it's good to connect like this. And yeah,
you can get the same amount of information transfer or just same amount of like work done in like 2 minutes on the phone with someone, or just by messages could take a few weeks, a couple of weeks, or a month even. Like, but in person, it's like sometimes just call someone, oh yeah, or someone I was designing like a design for Swasti in a collaboration with the BMX shop around here. And I was going to send him all the designs, say what he thinks, what he wants to add to it or whatever. And I was like, I'm just going to go over there. And it took literally 5 minutes. I showed him the picture, tell me what it was like. Yeah. And I was like back home just working on it already. I was like, wow.
I was just going to say as well, because there's a lot that is lost in just messaging, you know.
Yeah,
like so much communication happens with hands and faces and tone and, you know. So
I like the emojis a lot. It's like the text and then the mood that
And Kelly, as you're bringing that up, I was thinking that too, that there are like there's various levels of communication and interaction. And you know, so many people have gotten used to this year of interacting just through message, right? We kind of, in an attempt to make things more convenient, it's very, you know, sometimes we'll just text somebody, right? But then this point that you guys are both bringing up, that a lot of times if you just see someone in person, the information that needs to be transferred can just almost, it's almost, what's the word? Like symbiosis? Is that the word?
Yeah.
Could be. It's a word.
It's a word.
Yeah.
Right. Then it's just like the subtle kind of transference.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is a step towards that, being able to see everyone's face. Mm-hmm. So thank you for being here with us, Joris.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure.
So Joris is, just for kind of a bit of a background, he is originally from France, in the south of France, and he's a professional BMX rider. He's been writing since he was 13 and he's now 31. So they, he's flipped the numbers.
Yeah. When I was writing down, I was like, oh, nice.
Yeah. he's traveled all over the world to write, and this is how he's really opened up to spiritual consciousness. He, in his travels, met so many different people, met so many different cultures, and really saw the universal underpinnings of all of these different areas and cultures and experiences. The more that he followed that guidance that he was getting and the kind of the clues that the universe was laying out for him, so to speak, the closer he got being called towards India. So he went to India and he went without his bike that time. And that's when he found the Bhagavad Gita as it is.
First hour being in India.
Crazy.
Wow.
It was in the hotel room on the bed table. Bhagavad Gita as it is. I just landed. It was a night. I was like just overwhelmed by the city already. It was in New Delhi, cows outside, people sleeping outside.
Oh, yeah.
And we get to the room, just like, see that book? Just look at the pictures, like, wow. Look at the name of the chapters. Absolute knowledge, king of knowledge, like, the universal form. Like, I was like, oh, wow. This is, I knew it was the trip was done. I was like, I came to grab that book. That was it.
That was quick.
Yeah, so quick.
And even was, like, yeah. Even the best thing you could have asked room service, like that you know, Bhagavad Gita wouldn't even have crossed their mind, would I guess. So.
I almost grabbed it, but I was like, that's the hotel property. I was like, I'll find it on my during the trip. But then the whole, because being in India, I was kind of overwhelming. So I almost forgot about finding the book. And we traveled, we went to Mumbai, Goa, and then went back to Mumbai, like really like all over India pretty much. And then we're getting close to the end, and I remember we're walking down the street in Mumbai, and I was like, oh, I forgot about the book, like the Bhagavad Gita. I have to like try and find it before we leave. And the same day, you're just walking down the street, I see like a book stand in the street. They were just outdoors selling books. Like, you don't happen to have like the Bhagavad Gita by any chance? They're like, yeah, sure, what size? Big, small? Well, I want a bit small size, travel size, because I was traveling a lot.
Yeah.
And again, that was Prabhupada's book, like not any random Bhagavad Gita that I didn't know at the time that the difference would be. And then, yeah, just got it and read it twice, went back, read it twice in a row, like really fast.
Yeah.
Eating it. Because I was ready at that time when I found it, I was like, it was just saying what my heart was already, my I don't know, my vision of the world was, but with perfect words and wisdom.
Yeah, that your desire had aligned by all the, you know, the collective experiences that you had up to that point. You had such a strong desire, and that desire was so clear that Krishna just revealed himself immediately.
I felt like he just revealed himself. It was just like, okay, here I am. Like, you've been looking everywhere. And I really understood it. This is like person. I knew that the universe was responding. Like everything I said, if there's no one in the room, I could just say a word, it's heard, and it's going to reply at some point in some shape, somehow. It was, I don't know, it was just a matter of time. And yeah.
That's something I really want to, want you to elaborate on, Joris, is just this question of culture. And, you know, when I've been to India, you know, we hear about culture shocks, right?
Yeah.
But there is something within different cultures that can resonate with you. I remember going to Rotterdam for the first time, and you know, although it was a very different culture, there was something about the place that really resonated with me.
Mm.
And that's something about Krishna consciousness I find very interesting, because you have culture and you have even like expectations of behavior, sadhacha, and you know, etiquette and different customs and very specific kind of lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
But being in such a unusual place such as India for you, you found something and immediately it resonated with you in some kind of way, you know. And then the fact that you've brought that and you've managed to integrate it into your life, and now, you know, you perhaps, I'm not sure, but I doubt you actually live like an Indian person culturally, you know. But there's something about the heritage and the teachings of, you know, that you've managed to integrate the essence.
All the externals are different because it's a different place, time, and everything, but the essence is still the same.
Mm.
For sure, yeah.
Mm.
But there was like, awesome. I want to go back also before finding the guitar and going to India. What, how I got to India, I was always like signs and like, I feel like from a really young age, now that I've read like all the books and stuff, that I understand like the realization, Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, Bhagavan, that I had Brahman realization very early and very impersonal. And I remember like even doing some things that were like now like harming a snail or just like, because my brother had like attachment to a snail. And I remember like killing the snail because there's so much attachment to the snail. I was like, it's such a small creature that will, that doesn't last. Like I could feel, I don't know. It was kind of bad to kill the snail. Now I wouldn't do it ever again. It's like when you have that impersonal, it's missing the compassion and like missing what you get in Bhagavan, the personal aspect where, oh no, it's a person, it's not impersonal.
Yeah.
So you, like my Mayavadis can make mistakes by like that kind of thinking, but I was like really receptive to like signs. And for example, the Alchemist book really helped me a lot. If you guys read The Alchemist.
Yeah.
I remember I wasn't really into reading at all when I was younger at school, anything that would give us like books to read. I was reading the minimum amount I could. And but that one time they gave us a list and The Alchemist was there. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty interesting. And that was one of the ones that I read. And it really like blew my mind. But I couldn't really remember the story like 10 years later or like when I grew up. And I knew I wanted to read it again. But I didn't like go straight to the store, buy it and get it done. I was like, yeah, I gotta read it again. And I was like on the trip, BMX trip, road trip. And my friend, like with who I had like kind of like talks like that, like spiritual talks, were like growing on the same level pretty much. We would meet like different places in the world and like just gather information and like grow like that. And then I seen his back during that trip, The Alchemist. Like, wow, the book is like getting closer. It's here. Like my friend, like with who I like have this kind of conversation, he's reading it right now. So I tell him the story. Like I was just thinking about reading it again. I read it at school, but not much. I didn't grab it or he didn't give it to me. A few months passed, and then I go to my dad's visit, and my stepmom is like, "Oh, I just cleaned the bookshelf, and there was a couple of books I think you might be interested in." Boom, The Alchemist. And another book. I was like, it's been 6 months I've been just thinking about it. It's been like getting closer. And then I open it, start reading it, and it's all about the universal language, the sign, the universe, the alchemy. The book is even about like listening to the universe, the signs, and that's how the book got close to me. And then yeah, this book and the beer now. It was kind of like escalating to that point.
It's amazing. The kind of universal experience that I've that I notice across any seekers, really, there's always this entrance, and I think The Alchemist really kind of talks about that, like this entrance into the next door, the next door, the next door, like deeper and deeper into what it is our hearts desire, and as our desire changes, how those things just show up for us, in a big way. I'm curious. I want to kind of take it back because we kind of dived right in, which is awesome. But I want to take it back to a little bit of your background, because one thing that you're well known for is the Swasti brand, which is you're wearing a shirt right now, which is taking kind of modern pop culture, and you know, transcendentalizing it.
Yeah.
But another thing that you're quite famous for is you're a professional BMX rider. So I wanted to kind of hear just a little bit about that.
Yeah.
How did you originally kind of get into professional BMX riding, and what has that been for you in your life?
Well, it's pretty much been the best thing I could ever ask for. But it started from just, I was very active when I was younger, like just running around. And my mom said, like, you have to do a sport, like do something, like channel this energy. So I tried, like, at first it was basketball. I played basketball from like 6 to 12 years old, like really, really, really passionately.
Yeah.
But then we moved and then the club was like not as good. So like switched like different sports. I tried something else. But every time it was just like, I love the sport, playing the game, the rules, everything. But the training program, the teacher, just everything about like too many rules. It was just like too, it would get the fun out of like play tennis. Tennis was so strict. I loved to play, hit the ball, like play game. Like, but the teacher was just like, it made the thing like not fun. And for example, if you didn't want to play tennis or basketball the Wednesday, the course was on that day anyways. You miss it or... So I was like, yeah, this is frustrating. And then I found skateboarding and I was just free to go whenever I want, do do it how I wanted to, and then find my own master, find the guy, the skater that I really appreciate, and copy their style. Getting from it, I was free to just grow. More like spirituality, you know, you have like inspiration, and it's more free.
Yeah.
But then it switched from skating to riding bikes, because when one time I was just by myself, pretty much all the time skating, it's kind of hard to get in the scene. I mean, I was probably younger too, but I saw these guys. They came where I was riding with bikes, jumping all over the place. But they were more as a group. I really attracted me. They were just like jumping all over, but kind of like as a dance together. Instead of like as a skater, I was more feeling like separated, or because there's more skaters, so a little more impersonal, and then the riders had like a tighter group. And I really attracted me, and I instantly switched, got a bike for Christmas, next Christmas. And I was 13. And yeah, I was just so passionate. I just did it so much that already at 16, I started to get a sponsor for bike parts and stuff like that. And then by 17, I started writing for Nike. So that was like a pretty big thing. The guys came from Paris, so like signed a contract and everything. They wanted me on the pro team. Yeah, and I was on Nike for like 11 years.
Writing for Nike. So for people, because I've always wondered this about, you know, I raced BMX for a little bit. It wasn't trick BMX. It was just like racing. And so, you know, I always had this concept of like being sponsored, or like in extreme sports. What does that mean? They just send you things, or they actually just kind of fund you so that you can live and kind of keep doing the sport that you love?
Yeah, that's pretty much what there's different level, like amateur, you pretty much just get parts or a travel budget or stuff like that. And then, but like actual pro, you get a salary, or just there's a budget for parts. For my bike, I get like, it feels like it's unlimited. I don't go through my parts on my bike. I get parts as much as I want.
Yeah.
They pay me for, but Nike was definitely like the most paid sponsor. They just stopped the entire BMX program at some point. They changed the CEO, and he was like, we're just going to focus on skateboard. And they canceled the entire program. They had like the best team in the world, like best riders in the world, but they didn't care. But yeah, there were shoes like falling from the sky or anything. Just give to my family, and I still have like up to the like a stack like in France. My mom's like,
yeah,
so much shoes. and they would pay like, they would do like at the beginning, especially like so many events all over Europe and the world, and I would get invited because I was
Movie,
so every event that they would do, I was invited. So I could like meet. Because, you know, like in speciality, we say association is the key. It's the same. I realize it's the same everywhere. That's what helped me in BMX to grow so far and actually become good at it, because I associated from a very young age to the big guys, the professional riders, the main, like my heroes in riding became my friends very quick.
Yeah.
And I was riding with them, hanging out with them, going on trip with them. And that's how it's like elevation. It's like if you go to the temple, you go to Vrindavan, you meet with the Swamis. There's no way you're not going to elevate stuff like that. So same process. Yeah.
I love the point of how you kind of ditched skateboarding for BMX, because, you know, one aspect was it was more inclusive, you know?
It's a little tighter, yeah. The group, the community, even though it's a very nice community in skateboarding, they're like brothers and stuff, but I feel it's just the numbers. There's so much skaters, because it's way easier to skate. A bike is more expensive. You need a specific bike. They break or you have fixed tires. You can get a skateboard at the supermarket for like $30 and then become a skater, start from there. So in numbers, there's more money in skateboarding. There's more people. And there's a little more impersonalism also. You become like kind of like a little lost. And biking is kind of like that. Little same spirit, but a little tighter. That's it.
I was just thinking that, you know, like how people often try and find an excuse to have relationships, you know, I went to the city closest to me, like an hour away from where I live, last weekend, and the shops are just starting to open up a little bit because of COVID in the UK. And there was like a coffee and tea shop, and I went in, and you know, they were serving coffee and tea, but all of the tables and chairs were strapped to the walls, you know. And so I was asking the guy what's business like, and he was saying, yeah, it's slow, and he's finding it difficult. But we started talking about how a lot of people, they go there because coffee or tea is just an excuse to chat, you know.
Yeah.
They're not going because they love chamomile or because they love a latte necessarily.
They probably have it at home already. So.
Exactly. They have the tea at home, but it's the experience. And I was just reflecting on that. So many of our passions and where we invest our time, it's like, obviously we love doing certain activities, but the underlying principle is we're just looking for an excuse to have relationships, you know?
And this point of how we associate, who those relationships are with, how much that propels us on a trajectory in life. And like you're saying, you had this opportunity to start, you know, being around and spending time with these heroes, these people that were already established in the world of professional biking, and how that catapulted your own experience and career.
Yeah. And how then it was always a dream, because I started to see like people make a living out of it. They just lead like their sponsors and they go on trips all the time. And so I knew it was a thing, but I was still going to school. My mom was always like being smart and saying, you never know, or how long you're going to be able to do it. So I was like, it was common sense. I was like, yeah, definitely. And I wasn't struggling at school, so it was kind of like easy to do both. Yeah. So I went to my high school degree, and then I went to high school even like for 3 years. So it was always like, I could balance both, but at some point I knew that it was already like so developed. Yeah. I didn't graduate my high school, and they wanted me to come back for another semester. And at some point I was like, all right, I just dedicated so much time. It was like business school, and I wasn't even convinced by the diploma anyway. It was like, I might not even want to work in that industry, so I don't want the diploma. So I didn't go back. Yeah. I focused. And that's when I actually started like fully blossom, because I did that gap of like letting go of like, I don't know. And then actually I know I can do it. And
because of those relations that you had with people that were already doing it, you knew it was possible.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a key aspect of even spiritual life, is that we have to be around people and that show us that it's possible, or what's possible.
Yeah.
Right.
They reveal to us what's symptoms, possible. They're already doing it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. I'm interested in the culture as well around that. Like we were talking about culture. I feel like biking and skating and those kind of sports have a very specific vibe to them, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't know, Ananda, you used to be a pro BMXer.
I wasn't pro. Mm-hmm. I was a 12-year-old kid, and I
I mean, I used to try and skate, you know, and I was terrible at it, but I was there for the hang, you know. I really wanted to feel like those guys. I wanted to feel cool, you know.
Yeah.
And just hearing about your trip to India and how you came to Bhakti a little bit, which I'd like to hear more about as well.
Yeah.
But maybe before you go into that, could you explain a little bit more about the actual kind of like the scene and the culture with, you know, with riding and the kind of style and, you know?
Yeah. Well, I just watched Skate Monk podcast that you had the other day, and he was talking about that a little bit. So that's definitely, you covered that. But also learning from Bhakti, all the Sri Prabhupada books, the Bhagavatam, like I got to understand actually where it all came from, like type of energy, like, and all that stuff. But it's definitely a lot more like parties and like intoxication. But also I came to realize that it was like linked with the, Skidman was saying, like there's a lot of pain involved when you do tricks. And almost like, it goes along. Without indulgence in these intoxicants, you wouldn't be able to like go through that. It goes. It's like you hear from Vedic culture, the Kshatriyas were able to drink some alcohol after war time, or even eat meat. I watched some old like Hindu movies, like Bollywood movies, and because they have the tradition and everything. Some families that were Kshatriyas, they would eat meat offered the Kali. But because it's part of the Kshatriya, because eating meat is eating violence. So if you want to go to the battlefield and kill other people, you need some kind of violence. You wouldn't bring like a saint on the battlefield. It's not going to defend anyone. But so everything has a purpose. And I feel and I realize from, because I indulge in those intoxicants for a while, and then to a point where I go like, whoa, that's become like just a habit, or just it becomes like just a routine kind of. So I kind of step back at some point. But I felt that it goes along, like smoking, like the marijuana helps relieve the pain, relieves the fear of like the doubts you can have in your mind. Sometimes like during the same day, I would like hurt in the morning, kind of like stop writing, like I'm done for the day, but we're on the road trip filming. So we keep going from spot to spot, and we have like to film. And my friend would like roll a joint, I would smoke, chill, and then an hour later, pain is gone. My mind is totally back to normal, and I would just write again. And like, whoa, I thought I just said I was gonna stop writing today, but now I feel fine. So it, and then go through the trip like that. So it's almost like medicine that you have to use. So there's a reason. Most writers, most caterers, they don't think about it, but it, like, that's just indulge. Yeah. Sometimes maybe too much, but it goes somehow hand in hand. It's like a darker mode of existence for sure, but that's the lifestyle kind of.
Yeah, it was. It's the kind of. You're speaking to just the physical aspect of extreme sports. It's just like there's so much physical demand on the body. So then that lends itself to a lot of, you know, drug use
and really the mind, like that. Mind even more. The more I do it, the more I realize that it's all in the mind. Like my what I do most right now is riding on rails. One of my favorite things to do is to double tire, we call it, with my bike. I just ride double with my two tires on the rail. So it's pretty much like it looks impossible from the outside. You know, how can someone just two wheels or even one wheel can just manual on the rail?
It my heart like skips every time I watch you like jump up to do it. I'm like, huh.
Yeah, like even next to a building or next to a real gap, it's more like really more mental. Sometimes my heart like races, like it's really like a intense. It's almost like a cigarette after it's like needed. Like sometimes like comes down back to earth. It's like really you get like some trance feeling sometimes.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. Like, and I guess there's different levels, and the higher you go in writing, more you see like these type of intoxication kind of. If you're more chill, you're able to like stay away because you're not really pushing it. But I see a lot of pro writers, they kind of, not like everyone smokes, but like or drink, but it's almost like hand in hand, like.
Yeah,
but there's also an aspect of a victory. I went to I was going to this contest in Estonia every year, and it's like known for big parties, one of the biggest contests in the world, and I've always been invited and going. Nike was paying for everything. But that one year I couldn't ride because I hurt my ankle pretty bad. I couldn't barely walk just the week before the contest, so it was already booked, so I decided to go anyways. But I couldn't ride, so when came night and everyone was just partying, I didn't ride the contest. And I didn't feel like at all like drinking or partying with everyone, because I didn't like push to work during the day. Just there was no. So I just sat down all day. And then when they were partying after riding, sweating all day, and it was like, but I didn't feel it. It was like it came after work. It's not just drinking for drink. Most people just drink for drinking, but in our tradition, it's kind of like after hard work. You know, they open a beer after a session where they sweat and they fell on the ground, and then it's like. It's like a whole cycle of like going high from adrenaline or whatever that is, and then coming back. It's like a whole thing, but it creates, I don't know.
I wanted to maybe like draw parallel with, you know, with the kind of lifestyle you're talking about, and then a more like strict active lifestyle. Because one thing that I realized, you know, as I was getting into Bhakti, was that there was a demand, there was an expectation to be renounced, to be sober, you know. Like, and a lot of the expectations for the benefit of spiritual life can seem quite strict to the outsider, you know, like waking up super early, no intoxication, no meat eating, no sex, you know, no gambling. Even, and you know, if you're a monk, then it's like quite a solitary life as well. You just hang out with a certain type of people, and so that was, you know, that was kind of like an obstacle I had to get over to begin with when I moved into the ashram, because I was thinking I don't want to give up all these things. But the thing that really allured me and helped me to progress on the path was like finding a taste, finding an adrenaline rush, finding something higher within the, you know, culture. Like it must be so hard to BMX, but then when you get, you know, when you land a trick successfully, or you know, when you experience bliss with like going traveling with your friends or your mates or whatever, it's all worth it. And that's kind of how I felt going to these spiritual festivals and connecting with people. It's like, this lifestyle is hard. Like I woke up at 3 a.m. this morning and took a cold shower, and I'm totally spaced out. But I'm at this incredible festival with all these people, and it's like that.
Every
it makes
pleasure
it worth it.
Really takes pain first. Like we need to like work in order to attain any. That's at least on a mature level. When I got like struggle to get like one fruit of the of the tree. But yeah, that's interesting what you're saying.
Can I ask a question then? Because you were describing how you went to India, you found the Bhagavad Gita. And so I'm just interested how you've managed to integrate your BMX culture with spiritual life, or how you've managed to integrate spiritual life with the BMX culture. And, you know, also like, I guess your lifestyle is quite unique in one sense. So I'm just wondering, on a day-to-day basis, on a, you know, a day in the life of Joris, what does that look like? And are there people, you know, you're talking about swamis in India and stuff, do you get instruction from people where you live, or, you know, how do you kind of stay spiritually nourished and manage to also keep BMXing and that really intense lifestyle, you know?
Yeah. Well, first, from like how I integrated it, like I was saying, like I got introduced to Krishna consciousness from the Gita itself, from finding the Gita from like an actual search. So I didn't meet the devotees. So it took me probably 2 years before I met actual devotees. I think it was in New York, Union Square, when I was there. So it took me a while to meet the devotees. So I never had, from the version that I had from the book itself, Krishna, what Krishna was saying, what Prabhupada was saying, it was 100% spiritual. Literally, it means you can do, Krishna says, you do whatever you want, you offer the result to me. You don't look if it's bad, you don't look if it's good. You offer the result to me, I'll take care. Meaning, you could be selling drugs, you make $10,000 a month, you give $5,000 to the temple, in a year, you won't be a drug dealer anymore. Krishna will arrange for you not to be a drug dealer anymore. That's how people wait to purify themselves in order to like worship.
To do something spiritual.
Yeah, no, that's actually the cure. Like bhakti is the process and the goal.
I just wanted to say, because I actually have a friend who had the similar thing. He was really into drinking and he got into Krishna consciousness. And in the first week he went to the pub and he, you know, he was at the bar with his beer and he thought, I should really offer this to Krishna, you know, so he like holds us up. Sri Vishnu.
That's what I was doing. I was so like naive and like so like purely like just like taking it like as it is, really. That at that beginning when I was reading the Gita, still traveling, I would just still feel live the same lifestyle. But sometimes I would like be with friends on a trip, like and drinking at a bar and go to the bathroom and start chanting the Maha Mantra in the bathroom while I was speaking, you know, like Hare Krishna. So happy. So it was like coming together perfectly. I was just finally being free, like, oh my God, there's like the whole thing makes sense now. It's like, and I didn't try, I could feel that these things were like to avoid from the lecture still. But I never made an effort to push them away because it was kind of like my lifestyle. It was kind of like I would be like sometimes like smoking a joint and reading the Gita, just like, and you would like be in it, just like reading. But the Gita and the chanting that was coming along pushed everything away. In about 2 years, I stopped drinking. I stopped eating meat first. No, it was 2 years, so like fully stopped eating any kind of meat. First, I stopped buying meat for myself. Then a little bit of fish, then eggs, but it's everything was pushed away without me thinking about it. It was just like, I don't need anymore, I don't need anymore.
Yeah.
Just from reading and focus, I was focusing on the light, not removing the darkness.
Yeah, you're just adding the positive.
Exactly, and I felt it was like, oh my God, it's all going away. Now, when I wanted to like stop smoking, it wasn't even hard. It was taking too much time it was rolling, sitting, smoking. It was just too much. I wanted to chant, I wanted to read, I wanted to like do all this stuff. It was just taking more time on something that was more pleasurable now. So now I'm back to like another, like from association, moving over here, like some stressful situation. And I kind of like also like try not to force it. Went back to like in between, but it's a different total relationship. And
I love this point of just adding the positive. And recently on another Bodhika podcast, the Arise podcast from the Honest Man's podcast, they had this whole discussion about really adding, you know, and it really stuck with me, but you add what really makes you happy in spiritual life, those things that are uplifting in our spiritual practice.
Yeah.
You add those, you do those things. And by that, it brings out,
then you don't have time for bad. There's no time for bad
stuff. Yeah. And it brings out this organic desire to commit deeper.
Yeah.
To the principles and to the lifestyle that's already giving us so much satisfaction and fulfillment.
Yeah. because focusing on the bad is not even motivating. It's like it looks bad, so sometimes you don't even think you can do it. You look at your bad side, but if you just like take, like, I like the analogy that Prabhupada was always saying, like, that when the sun rises, it dissipates darkness before it's even above the horizon, before you even see the sun. The darkness is already going away. Like Maya is the darkness and God is the sun. Maya goes away as soon as Krishna comes. Like, even she cannot be in the same room.
Yeah.
So the more we like Krishna, there's no question of it went away.
Yeah. And I think that takes us, because two things I wanted to kind of touch on. I want to get to this, the creation of Swasti, this brand that you've created, that you've kind of really pioneered, and you're, you know, doing just that in a practical way. Like, we titled this discussion Divine Appropriation. But I remember you mentioned when you found the Gita, it was the artwork that really stuck in your mind, and it really caught your attention. And before, you were also showing me some of those stickers and pictures that you had printed out. And could you tell us a little bit about your experience kind of with the artwork of the Gita and what you would do with those pictures?
Yeah, well, yeah, the plates are really self. There's like a plate for every ID pretty much of the Gita. So it was really like, it felt like I've seen them before when I really went out and seen them. And I started like printing these paper I had in here, paper cards, just for myself, just to remember, and I put them in this plastic thing so to preserve them. And I was giving them away, kind of like friends, when I would meet them. But that's when I started bringing stickers. I thought everyone loves stickers.
Yeah.
Round stickers, especially in BMX and stuff, it's like you put on the bike, but then I realized everyone loves stickers. I think there's one here. You see, they're so nice. This one I just peeled off the wall.
Uh-huh.
Baranga. But I can, it still sticks really good for, it's waterproof. But I was making them for myself, like always like 27. So I would do like four types by 27. So it'd be like 108 stickers, something like that.
Wow.
And it would have them with me, and like everywhere I would go, like if I start a conversation and it would start to like go into like spiritual subjects, I was like, yeah, well, here's a sticker, kind of like a token or seed, you know, like, and someday even someone wanted to buy a sticker off me. It was like, no, but that devotee in Mayapur. Like, no, but you should sell them. Like, I don't care. Like, it give me money, and it was like rupees. It was nothing, but it was just for the gesture.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I guess I should probably like start something. And then I actually made new stickers, and I created the design with the flower of life and the Maha Mantra around it. I was like, that kind of looked like a original design, so it could be a brand stickers. So that's why the name Swastikers. It was like stickers.
Swastikers.
I didn't know. Wow. Genius.
And then I was like, well, stickers is very limiting. I might do shirts or other stuff someday. So I just cut it to Swasti. And it just flowed like organically, and it was meant to happen. Like I was going to say earlier, like one of my, like how I integrated like Krishna consciousness into my life, like writing, and one of my thing I always remember, and I feel like that's how I kind of like leave, is like, with the, like the path of the least resistance. You heard that, the path of least resistance, like water. With as humans, because we can decide, the mind is yes, no, we can decide, we can stop on an obstacle and decide not to go around.
Yeah,
water doesn't think like that. It's obstacle around, and didn't even think about the obstacle, never stopped actually. And so if there's resistance somewhere, I just go around, I just keep the goal in mind and just go around, and that's how like flow so easily.
Stop. And so is that kind of the, because it's even like this shirt, like, you know, the shirt that you're wearing, it's, you know, the explicit content design, right? But and so immediately kind of people have a recognition of that this is a part of our popular culture. And then it's, you know, then it's so automatically they're already attracted. They may assume what it says, but if they look, please chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
Yeah.
And there are so many things like this that you've created.
And the more, it wasn't like, I didn't think I was going to do like that. It just happened. Like I did one and then two, three, and then I was like, well, the ideas keep coming. And always when I start digging, it's always I make one connection usually or two, but then as I make it on computer, my phone, it's like, wow, there's so many like levels of like connection of everything. Like when I did like the Rolls Royce, Rally, like Prabhupada was using a Rolls Royce. He was actually talking about that. Like,
wow,
there was like always so many levels, and it just meant, it was like, because we're talking about divine appropriation, what I wanted to say mainly is that it's reappropriation. Mm. We've already been stealing everything from God's creation. Like, there's so many things I have in my mind. Like yesterday I posted like Brahma being flying on a swan. Mm-hmm. And I was watching the Joe Rogan and Raghunath podcast. Mm-hmm. And at some point, Joe Rogan is like, I kind of have a hard time believing in Hindu mythology because you see gods flying on swans and stuff like that. Like, yeah, that, fair enough. And the other day, I was, like, I was by the in Long Beach here, by the water, and people were just paddling around on swans. Like, oh. I was like, why do we do it then?
Yeah,
it must be fun. So there must be someone that has an actual swan.
Yeah,
too. So it's not that hard to believe. Like, you see miniature of everything. We've been stealing. You know?
I've been thinking about. I've thought in the past of, like, you know, devotees are known, Vaishnavas are known, they worship Shalagram Shila, they worship Govardhan, you know, and then in the 80s we had these corny things called pet rocks, right? Yeah. It's just the, yeah. It's just, where'd the idea of pet rocks come from? From the pure idea of worshiping the Shalagram Shila.
Everything, the swing, everyone loves the swing, Radha and Krishna, we push them on the swing. You know, like the bulls, you know, the in Spain, they do like the corridor or the corrida.
Yeah.
You know, the guy with the red flag, and he has a bull, and you see the pastimes where Krishna is killing the
fighting bulls, the demon, bulls.
Fighting the yeah. bulls. There's so many, like, just fighting in general. Krishna, when he fought with Kamsa and Balaram, they were showing all the martial arts. They were experts, like people like UFC fighting. When you see those pictures of Krishna fighting with his brother, it looks like UFC now. It's like, it's just a mirroring. Which all Krishna actually did everything, and we're just imitating, taking pleasure in what he takes pleasure of doing. We're just like microcosmism.
One point I really like, I was speaking to my parents today about propaganda, right? Like the only way any authority comes into being is through propaganda, right? Whether they're benevolent or evil. And I was just... I was remembering there's an American skate brand, Supreme.
Yeah.
And I saw, I can't remember what devotee it was. Maybe it was Brindavan Kirtan Prabhu.
Yeah.
And so he was wearing this shirt. It said Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, this was a few years ago. So I was living in the ashram then, and I was really trying to get into, like, Vedic culture, you know? I was listening to lectures about Vedic culture, and I was really interested in that kind of thing. But when I saw this guy wear this t-shirt, I thought, wow, that's so cool. You know,
yeah.
It was immediately like, I resonated with it immediately. Yeah.
That was actually one of my first idea, but I also met Vrindavan Kirtan and I saw the shirt and like, oh, it's been done already, but I was actually, yeah, before Swasti even.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But I just think that
if you write Krishna, with I was going to write the Supreme logo, just write Krishna with the italic font, the exact font and everything, the same amount of letters.
Uh-huh.
Supreme and Krishna, seven letters.
Uh-huh.
And like so many, when I did the Hollywood sign and I did Hare Krishna, same amount of letters. Hollywood has, I didn't have to like add anything, you know, like change. Every time it was like... It's like same amount of letters, or I just have to like I play with the Krishna spelling like seven letters or five letters, you know, it could, to match, but it just fits every time. Like,
so I think this is genius because such a big part of Krishna consciousness is sharing Krishna consciousness, you know, yeah. And we hear time and time again, if you want Krishna consciousness for yourself, you have to share it, which involves propaganda, you know, Yeah, what you're doing is so cool. It's so effective. And I think, you know, there's devotees like yourself that have probably been empowered in ways to reach people that wouldn't otherwise have been reached, you know?
Yeah. No, but yeah, definitely felt it because when I found Krishna consciousness, it gave purpose to whatever my BMX career. It was right at the peak because I was like learning about spirituality. So the BMX world I like was losing importance. The more you learn about spirituality, everything in material lose a value or anything. But then when actually the Krishna consciousness is like settled, it's like, oh, let me use all of that. Let me use all that I have to actually offer something or use, like, I, like, when I started up, I didn't have that amount of followers. I actually gained half of it, like, the recent years. And so, like, I can actually use these people that are watching what I'm doing to do that. And that's why I went to India instantly. Mm-hmm. So I had to go back over that. I found the Gita the first time. I read it, like, twice in a row by myself. Mm-hmm. And then by the second time, I was like, well, I need to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I ordered it online, got the whole set. And it took me 2 years to finish it.
Wow.
In a row, just by myself at home, like, reading as much as I never used to read. It was just, like, just eating it.
Yeah.
And by the time I was, like, getting close to the end, Nike reaches out, and they're like, well, yeah, we want to do a trip with you, and you can go wherever you want. You just do a trip, we'll pay for everything. I was like, what? So I was like, we need to go to India, because I was, like, meet Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to go to India and do a, kind of like a documentary or like something cool out of it. And I just, so we planned the trip and everything. And crazy enough, I just finished the Krishna book just before going back.
Wow.
To India. And that time we ended up going to Vrindavan, because now I knew there was a place called Vrindavan where you could find Krishna directly. But
yeah.
So we went back like that. But by that time, I was like fully, I knew the whole thing. And the video, because I feel like, had an idea of the video, like what I wanted to show, like some tricks, but also like all the culture, like some of the temples. But I was like, it's India, riding in India. I've seen people going to India riding. There's not so many people, so many people coming looking at you. It's like pretty good struggle. So I was like, we don't know. Everything went perfect. I didn't get hurt once. We got help. We got everything we needed. Like, it was magic. Wow. I was like, Krishna really helped it.
What is that? What is that video called?
Balance.
It's called Balance. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to put
it
in.
And he got, like, nominated for the Bicycle Film Festival in New York, like, the year after or something. Like, it was pretty cool. It was played at the festival.
So I'm interested at this point to ask about, you know, this word appropriation is usually found in, like, controversial conversations, you know?
What is?
The word appropriation. Like, yeah. So you said, actually, it's like reappropriation, because everything comes from Krishna anyway. We're just kind of dovetailing it or rebranding it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, when you were in India, or when you brought back influences from India back to the West, did you ever find opposition from people who were like, oh, you can't use Krishna's name in this kind of way? Or I don't know, have you ever come across kind of controversy or opposition? And like, how have you navigated that?
Yeah, a little bit in the beginning, because, you know, like, I have my sponsors, bicycle BMX sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
They make me, like, parts. I have, like, signature parts that I can design, so I can ride with the parts that are good for me, like the geometry of the bars, the frame. So, but we can design also the artwork and the name and everything. So, like, I spiritualized everything. And at some point, the guys at the company already knew it, and then we were designing a new seat. But the designer, which I'm like giving my ideas, and we like work together to get like something done. He already drew something for me, thinking ahead, like, oh, I know, just let me know what you think. We can just do restart. It was just like suggesting. He sent me the drawing of a seat, this brown, black in the back, like this tag. And then the drawings are just like Vishnu on Garuda, Shiva's head, like baby Krishna, the home symbol, Trishul, kind of like a shao. She was all like,
oh my god.
I was like, it's okay, perfect. But it was like in the beginning, so I didn't think twice. I was like, perfect. I mean, if you guys want to put Krishna on the seat and then like sell it to people and like promote like the Om symbol, everything, I wasn't gonna ask them for that much, you know. But they already draw it, so I was like, let's do it. And then that's when people started to see, you cannot put these symbols on the seat because you sit on it, you know. And at that point, I understood, like, oh, wow, yeah, that's And then I felt by myself, even sitting here, seeing people posting pictures like I like beat or. But at that point in Kali Yuga, like that, I think it inspired, and that's still to this day, the seed that worked the best. People still, it was like one of the first, probably like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe even more. People still ask for it, like, where can I find one? When I see a picture, like, it worked really good.
Wow. I really like this point too, that kind of backtracking, but we kind of rounded back to it, that really being able to see Krishna everywhere. You're making this point about, you know, when you did that, there's a design that you've done where you take the Hollywood land, you know, skyline, the Hollywood sign up on the hill, and you change it to Hare Krishna. It's the same amount of letters, right? You did the Rolls Royce logo, and you did Radhe Radhe, right? And Prabhupada used to drive around in a Rolls Royce. The devotees would get him a Rolls Royce. So you were just seeing all these connections, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about how, and it goes along with this idea of adding the positive, but how Krishna is, Krishna is within every atom and all the space in between.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So just a little bit more about your experience of and maybe any stories of the designs that you've made that have had these connections.
Some of these are mostly ideas that I started to have like a while ago, just from the start Krishna questions, like, oh, due to putting things together, and now it finally comes back, or there's even more. I would have to like pull some out to actually remember, but to have a specific example. One that really worked well, I really realized, is the Vrindavan, the Nirvana shirt.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Because if you take the Nirvana word, it's the exact same letters as Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if you just rearrange them.
Rearrange them. And there's a show that's called Anavrin on Netflix. Because it's backward of Nirvana.
Uh-huh.
And when I posted it, I said Anna Vrindavan Nirvana. The three words can connect.
Wow.
That's crazy. And that phase, kind of like I did the Tilak, so it's kind of like the mood of like being in Vrindavan, kind of like in bliss.
That's incredible.
Vrindavan higher than Nirvana. At first I called the shirt higher than Nirvana. It said Hare Krishna. And then I was like, oh my God, Vrindavan Nirvana. And I modified, switched the design.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like almost like I just channel, like it's like Krishna wants it to happen. It's like it was already there. The word Vrindavan and Nirvana were already, I didn't do anything. Mm. It's like yesterday I was like, someone said about BMX, like so my friend posted like, oh, here's a trick that all the kids do these days, but it's been invented like 20 years ago. And then I replied, I commented just as a kind of like a joke, do we really invent tricks or do they already self-exist? Because the possibility is already there. If I actually do it, I didn't create it. The possibility was already there. I just followed it was a possibility. So it's like, it was already, we don't really create anything.
I wanted to ask, cause I saw you share a little video recently. There was this kind of free book stand out in the open somewhere, and you came across it and you put one of Prabhupada's books there. Which I thought that's a really cool thing. But I was also thinking in your life now, because you said you went through this huge book, the Bhagavatam, you know, it's like over 30 books in one. You went through that in like 2 years, and you've read so many books since then. So I'm just wondering at the moment what part does like philosophy and study and that kind of aspect of spiritual life play in your day to day? Because you know, there are some people who would kind of say we should dedicate all of our time to reading or chanting or whatever it is.
It's like I said, the path of least resistance, but just the phrase is what I just do it spontaneously. And like, I never read before. When it came, I read all of it twice.
Uh-huh.
I actually read the Bhagavatam twice also. I started a second time entirely. And now I like started the third time, kind of like to maintain, but I was starting to force it. Just I wanted to maintain. And I didn't get a taste to read it anymore because I understood it so much that I didn't need to like spend time reading. I had to like spend time acting about it, like being actually like putting in practice back to yoga and like fulfill this life. And then I ended up doing, now I do so much with Swasti that I actually chant a little bit less and I read a little bit less, but I don't feel less satisfied because when I'm like thinking about Krishna 24 hours, sometimes I wake up, I bring a design that I was working on, I work, I go to bed, I'm still working the same thing and I wrote during the day, kind of like it's transferred, but the meditation and the connection is still there in a way. It's like, I think Chaitanya was saying that it was a big scholar, but when he, at some point he kind of like, it was like he dropped all the books and he like, not comparing, but like there's like a level of a, at some point you just like, it's when it's in your heart, you can just like dance. And
it's an interesting point about like obligation and how I think you know, we've said this before as well, but when there's kind of obligation in relationship or in lifestyle, it's very easy to lose taste, you know.
Yeah.
And if you feel obliged to be in a relationship or you feel obliged to do spiritual life, it's easy to leave to lose taste, you know.
I think it was from Prabhupada, but it was I was watching following Sri Prabhupada. I get so much inspiration from these videos. But I think he was saying there's no question of force when there's love. And I was like, it's like, I want to run towards Krishna. Why would you push me? Like, there's no, when you love something, you're going to do it anyways. There's no question of force. As soon as you have to force it, it means you're lacking a little bit of love. But in Bhakti, we learned that though it's good to force in order to develop love a little bit, but it's good balance to have still. But don't, you shouldn't force it too much.
Yeah. This point of sometimes, if I cultivate the mindset around service as an obligation, right, then it kind of loses its
You can actually develop a bitter taste about it.
Yeah,
without knowing over the years,
being attentive,
it, but you're bitter about it.
Yeah,
and that's what happened with other religion and Christianity, and people rejected it because it became just the rules for the rules, and they even practicing didn't really know the reason behind most of the stuff they were doing, and then the younger generation didn't want to, the hypocrisy didn't match.
Yeah, so being attentive to how do I view my practice? How am I approaching the texts, the chanting, my daily activities? Not that I create it to be some burden. And I appreciate the mood that you're sharing, that, you know, allowing it, you know, if I love something, right, moving, that love is going to automatically pull me towards Krishna, towards my goal, what I'm actually attracted to.
Yeah, 100%, 108%.
Yeah.
So what does the future of like Swasti and your vision hold? Because I've only found out about Swasti quite recently, but it seems to be something that's growing and snowballing into something pretty cool. I know a lot of devotees that are very inspired by your style. Yeah. And I was just thinking the other day, like, you're a cool guy. And sometimes you post things online that are, you know, I'd think if someone else posted this, like, I would think, oh, maybe this is tacky or something. But because it's coming from you, there's this whole like aesthetic around it that's like, wow, that's cool. Even if I posted some of the same stuff, people would be like, you know, what are you up to, bro? But you've got this kind of, you've got this Shakti, you know, and it's really attractive, you know, it's really attractive to a lot of people. So I'm wondering, what's your vision? Like, how, you know, it seems like this is snowballing somewhere, going somewhere.
It is really like, cause it really started in mid 2019, really.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty interesting because 2020, when everything shut down, that's when I almost like found, not that I didn't find purpose before, but something happened in that year. Moving here, getting married, moving permanently in America, Swasti actually growing to something that's actually like a brand. So before, it was still, I was searching for what it was or what I was going to do. Now as there's something going on. But it was all during that time of 2020. And then I never been like so actually active myself, writing a lot, writing, doing like many videos and like keeping, I don't know, it's been like weird how like everything was shut down, but it was like, so, like, kept being like so productive. And but yeah, I really have no limits on how I want Swasti to be. I really don't try to hold a picture. I've done that with my life. See, like my hair is also an example of that path of least resistance. And I think that people, just from seeing me and just seeing my hair, they know my mind, in the sense of my heart, because you don't get hair like that just from, you couldn't make it, because I didn't make it. it just happens, and it happens if you have a certain type of mentality, because otherwise people fix their hair, it grows and you cannot stand it, so it shows kind of like some type of renunciation. I didn't touch them since when I woke up. I barely look at myself in the mirror before coming on here, but I was like, oh, it's like usual, you know, like it's just kind of like natural, and people feel that, and that's, I don't know, it gives a lot of inspiration. But I was going somewhere else with that. But
you're talking about swasti and not having, like, just kind of letting it unfold as it's as it's been doing.
When you hold a picture of what your life want to be or what your hair want to be, as well as just saying, then you limit yourself to what it could have been, and yeah, usually like you get frustrated, because if it's a little less, then we get frustration. I want it bigger, but if it was going to be bigger, you're actually holding it down, and so I try not to. The more people are getting involved, the more I'm grateful, and like I see, like you said, snowballing. A lot of people, Ragunat got interested. He wants to wear some shirts, and Namras also hit me up. Like people that I look up to, and I feel it's very important to have their opinion. And I don't know. I'm have all the. I'm here. Whatever's happening.
I think I mentioned to you, Ananda, about the it's called the backward law, you know, when you some people, they try so hard for things in life that through trying, they're just reaffirming that they don't have that thing. Actually, by not trying so hard and just kind of already feeling like you know you have what you need in life, then you're gifted with abundance and ideas and vision and clarity, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, George. Yeah, sorry.
I was gonna end up like about swasti. Like I started like create a little team, swasti team. Yeah. I call it, because
okay.
A lot of word with
swasti team. Yeah.
And just gonna like to show like different people like me or like skate monk that found something they really like. That's looks like it's different from Bhakti, but I don't want to just be like outside Bhakti activities. It could be like a, but kind of like a formula group and make videos kind of like that, like. He's gonna move here at some point back to California. So I'm gonna be able to film him and like film, maybe do a video together, like do projects like that. And also another project that I thought about last year, it might have to be like a longer term project, but I would love to build a skate park in Mayapur.
Yeah.
Wow. Create this, like, I have the whole concept is like, I know, cause I know the riders, BMX riders in India, and their job is actually what they do to leave is to build skate parks. They build skate park all over South India more, but they did also North, but they would do it. It would be like cheaper than building a skate park here. So I think it would be affordable kind of, but, and then it could be like a, they would have like a, I don't know, like a shelter there, like, you know, like a guest house, just to bring like more like younger generation, like people living in Mayapur, they could just skate around if they want to, just instead of running just, or some physical activities, I think. And it could be decorated also as a temple, you know, I want to paint it like, you know, like.
It would have to be the biggest skate park in the world, wouldn't it?
Next to that temple. For sure. Yeah. I don't know, but something would be nice. And yeah, just do a trip. It could be a documentary also about it. And that's like projects.
Prabhu, Someone I shared a picture of you saying we were going to do a podcast with you today, and you were wearing a swasti jumper and it had swastikas on it, and someone mentioned like, oh, he's quite brave to wear swastikas, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, well, actually that is what, you know, the Nazis did. They appropriated the Indian culture and used it for their own propaganda. It seems like it's cool that you're reappropriating, actually, like you said, you're reappropriating these things.
Yeah, I think at some point sometimes I've kind of like the, because I think just because of my hair, the Shiva energy, Tama energy, and I could get angry, like that kind of like anger, but that's like dharmic anger. It's like pure anger. I knew if I go out of anger and I kill someone, Krishna know that it's actually you have to die. Not that I never even fought anyone. I'm not even a fighter, but if I get mad at something, it's something that's actually disturbing universal peace or something, so it's like right in a sense. But what were you saying?
Just about the swastika and how the Nazis ruined it.
I kind of like this madness, I'm like angry, I'm like, no, at some point you just have to like say no, it is a beautiful symbol that has beautiful energy. Just by looking at it, you'll be purified, and we need to like get over it. And even in New York City last year, the Supreme Court or whatever, they were discussing about it, to like put it into like a bat symbol or whatever they want to call it, like a they had a term for it, like they wanted to classify like a
one of the reject bat symbols. It reject the symbol.
Yeah. And it was the whole thing was rejected, and apparently a lot of the Jewish community fought for to keep it. They know that it's a Hindu symbol that has good, they even have it in their own tradition. Yeah. So I was like, at least the Supreme Court or whatever officially they kept it, but that's why it's like now we need to like actually show these kind of things, not fear, we can explain it. It's
Yeah, take it back.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joris.
It's about to be 108.
Oh, it's
1:07 right now.
That's exactly when we should close this podcast. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah.
Hearing from you and getting to speak with you, and I'm looking forward to having pizza with you again in Mayapur. You can
looking forward.
Take us to the skate park, and
yeah,
Kelly and I can embarrass ourselves. And I used to take my scooter to the skate park, and I'd really piss off all the other like skateboarders and bikers that were at the, because I was a scooter kid.
Oh,
so
I still think you're cool. I still think you're cool.
Okay. Maybe I'll take my scooter to the Mayapur skate park.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Joris. Thank you for sharing, and thank you for doing what you're doing with Swasti. It's an inspiration to so many.
Thank you. Thank you, you guys, too.
Hare Krishna. Let's do this again sometime. Hare Krishna. Yeah,
for sure.
See you, man.
Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.
Okay.
That was nice.
Oh, we haven't ended. Here we go.